Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Hello there. My name is Bartholomew J. Fancy Cat, but humans have taken to calling me Sprinkles. I am a feline of discerning taste and luxury, and I demand the very best, and I want it delivered to my door. Meowbox is a subscription service that caters to felines like myself and gives us all sorts of new treats to try, toys that entertain, and even helps fellow animals in rescue shelters. They even personalize it for your cat's name. They still insist on calling me Sprinkles, however. What are you waiting for, human? Promo code GEEK10 and get 10% off your first subscription at meowbox.com. Now go visit meowbox.com for more information and tell them Sprinkles sent you.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or nothing, got your back. They're gonna save the world.
Latu, Barada, necktie? Hi, guys. It's Mike the Birdman Dodd here from ThisWeekInGeek.net, and this is the topic show for the month of October. As you can guess by my slightly mispronunciation, we are talking about the Evil Dead franchise. That's right. If you're joining us this week, you should know that on Starz, and I think Superstation in Canada, Ash vs. the Evil Dead comes out this Saturday on Halloween, I think at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, so be sure to be checking that out. But I'm not alone as I travel looking for the Book of the Dead. I'm joined by my compatriots.
Andrew Roebuck.
Ryan the Undead, uneven flow.
And of course, as we have every single year, we bring the master of Cinemasker himself.
James,
that's
hey, this is probably like my, fifth or sixth year or something?
I think so, yeah, because Twig's been around for 8 years. Yeah, you've been with us, James, pretty much since the beginning. That's kind of awesome, actually, that we've been able to keep this going for so long.
Yeah, it's just like our annual horror conversation.
Exactly, and it's great that, like, you get a chance to join us because obviously you're a very big horror buff filmmaker, and as you always do every Halloween, there's like Monster Madness. This year's format has changed things up a little bit more. We actually have done some discussion videos with your partner Mike. The last one I watched was the one on the Saw movies, and I kind of wonder if maybe that's a franchise we should tackle maybe for next year.
Oh god,
yeah, that might. I think we almost did 1 year.
So
that'll give me enough time, though. I'll start watching the rest of them.
Well, guys, there you go. There's next year's show. We're going to do the Saw franchise for better or for worse.
Yeah, yay, traumatizing Andrew.
So anyway, guys, as you guys have noticed, This Week in Geek.net has had, we've had a bit of a rough, about a week and a half. The website has been fully restored to full working order. We're probably going to have some up and downs over the next few days as we transition to a new server. So be aware of that. Today I posted my review of Halo 5 Guardians on the Xbox One with some interesting results, to say the least. Good game, just disappointing in the storyline department, but go check out that review if you want to find out more. Also, last week on the Nerd News Network, I was on 900 CHML in Hamilton to talk about Star Wars The Force Awakens on the Scott Thompson Show, so that was a lot of fun. And coming up this week, I have an interview with Mitchell Whitfield, who plays Fixit on Transformers Robots in Disguise. Should have a review for Guitar Hero Live. I know I'm talking with the senior developers later on this week. And hopefully we'll be able to re-record the Botched Roles, which is the role-playing game show where I talk about different books, franchises, and strategies for the tabletop gamer and you. So as we often do at the beginning of every show, we typically go around and see what everybody's been up to. And Andrew, let's start with you. What have you been up to since I last talked with you? It's been about a week or so.
Well, I've just been continuing my 30 days of horror. I recently, 31, if I knew how many days there were in the month of October. But I've been just recently, I caught up with all the old classic Universal monster movies. Now, I've seen them all before, but they're always a classic to watch in the Halloween season, and they really can't be beat. So that's what I've been up to.
Ryan, what about yourself?
I busted my tailbone and my heart, but nobody cares about that. So I just want to go on a really quick segue and use my time to say it's kind of weird that this is the first Halloween special we're doing. I remember the first one I did with James involved this person, but this is the first Halloween special since the death of Wes Craven. And we're going to talk about another really influential director, somebody else who managed to do a lot of things outside the horror genre. And so I think it's kind of fitting. But yeah, it's fucking hard to make a movie. And we have somebody here who's made a movie. And I think you can probably attest to that. And the fact that somebody like Craven and like Sam Raimi continued to challenge himself and do different things with each of his films, no matter how much success he had or how much risk there was, there's something really commendable about that. And I don't know, since it's Halloween and we're doing the Halloween show, I want to put a nod towards Craven because he was incredible.
Yeah, it's it's a good idea to mention him because there is an Evil Dead connection because because in all the Evil Dead movies, there are like ripped off posters and little Wes Craven hidden homages, which is really fun.
I guess, and finally, James, what have you been up to since we last saw? You've had the nerd movie out for a while. You're still doing the angry video game nerd stuff, but what else?
Oh, well, mainly Board James this year. This year, the focus has been on Board James after Board James has been absent for 2 years while I've been doing nerd stuff. So this time it's been more the focus on Board James. I have 2 episodes left this year before I'm going to hang it up again for a while. And the last 2 episodes are, I mean, as you can tell, they keep getting crazier and crazier. And the last one this year is going to be absolutely insane. So I've been doing a lot with that, and Monster Madness is winding down. So I'm working on a nerd episode at the very moment, and some other surprises before the end of the year.
You know, James, since you do the whole Board James thing, you know, we got to get you involved in a game of Dungeons and Dragons at some point.
That would be fun. Yeah, I'd like it for the research too.
You know what? We will talk off air about this because I think we could have something rather fun for that.
But today, Andrew and I were discussing our Dungeons and Dragons characters.
You know what, guys? Like I said, I've got some ideas for this, but we'll talk about that later. Trust me, it'll be fun. So anyway, guys, like I said, we're going to be talking about the franchise of Evil Dead today, celebrating all things the Necronomicon Ex Mortis and everything groovy. But before we do that, we have to thank our sponsors of meowbox.com, where if you want the promo code, it's in the commercial. Go listen to that. Get 10% off your first subscription over there. Plus offworlddesigns.com, who helps supply me in cool threads whenever I go to conventions or whether I'm just sitting around the game table playing Pathfinder. There's a promo code. You can grab that off our website, thisweekingeek.net. Highly recommend you do that. And of course, gameaccess.ca, Starfleet, the world's largest Argus Star Trek Online Fan Club, and many other people who help make this show possible. But before we get into the Evil Dead, here are just the facts.
I believe I have made a significant find in the Kandarian runes. It is entitled Naturan de Manto, roughly translated Book of the Dead. The book is bound in human flesh and inked in human blood. It deals with demons, demon resurrection, and those forces which roam the forest and dark bowers of man's domain.
In 1978, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, and Robert Tappert began creation on one of the most influential horror franchises of all time, The Evil Dead. While they were finishing college, the group of friends got the idea to create their own B-movie. They went to their local drive-in theater and began taking notes of everything that went into the world of cheesy horror films. Of their research, Campbell said this: "The message was very clear. Keep the pace fast and furious, and once the horror starts, never let up. The gorier, the merrier," became our prime directive. They managed to procure some fundings and set out to make a horror film inspired by the works of H.P. Lovecraft and his famous Book of the Dead, also known as The Necronomicon. The first film, as inspirational as it is, has a very simple concept. A group of friends travel to a deserted cabin, and one of them finds a Book of the Dead. Once they read from the book, the dead rise, and demons take over the forest. Slowly, one by one, each member of the cast is taken over by the dead, becoming demonic mockeries of their former lives. In the end, only Ash, played by a young Bruce Campbell, manages to survive. The film went for blood and guts so extensively that it was marked as one of the video nasties in England, which meant it got an X rating, making it unable to be shown in theaters in England. 6 years later, they released a sequel to the film entitled Evil Dead 2, which is the most popular and well-known of the entire franchise. The sequel retells the first film in the first 20 minutes and then proceeds to introduce new characters and concepts. With the higher budget, they were able to go grander and more gruesome. The film also had a much more intentional humor mixed in, adding to the film being more of a comedy than it was a horror. The last film in the trilogy was Army of Darkness, a film that is almost entirely comedic, with any horror elements taking a back seat. When you think of the iconic Bruce Campbell performance, you are thinking of Army of Darkness. He encompasses all of the campy goodness he's been known for all these years later. With the ending of Army of Darkness, the movie franchise was dormant for a while. However, the franchise did continue in the realm of comic books, with Ash Williams dueled the following characters: the Marvel Zombies, Dracula, Xena, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, and even the Reanimator. At one point in the comics, he even manages to save Obama from a deadite. The franchise also has had 5 video games, ranging from the Commodore 64 to the iOS, and has even had a Broadway musical. It seemed the franchise would be demoted to side stories as the distance between films began to grow and grow. That is, until 2013, the film was met with what originally seemed to be a remake, but was revealed to actually take place within the same universe as Ash Williams and the rest of the films. The new film had a much more serious tone, with most of the violence occurring in a very real, visceral manner. Some old-school fans found the new approach jarring, as it lacked the camp aspects of the original. Most recently, it was announced that a new TV series was premiering on the Starz network this Halloween. The TV show features an aging Ash Williams donning his chainsaw and boomstick for another battle against the armies of the Deadites. Interestingly enough, that show co-stars Lucy Lawless, who is best known for her role as Xena, and as previously mentioned, Xena did at one time have a run-in with Ash Williams in the comic series. So, as we eagerly await Ash's return, stay groovy this week in Geek.
Tantir mano mansizon hazam sobar saman la robza dal his hiker dans de rodza kanda kanda.
And thank you for that, Mr. Roebuck. So, yeah, we're here to talk about Evil Dead, and you know, long before Raimi did Spider-Man, which I don't know. What's he best known for at this point? I mean, Evil Dead's kind of back. Spider-Man's been rebooted by somebody else. He's still a busy man, but I don't know. Seems to be more on the production side, that kind of thing.
I would say more recently. I'd say more of the Spider-Man stuff.
Hmm.
Not the Blind Waiter?
Has anybody seen that? No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, yeah. There's these old... Well, because Raimi and Bruce Campbell and company, they were all just kids in their backyard making home movies, you know, like us. And they were, you know, shooting on 8mm and everything. And they made all these hilarious short movies that were just unreleased, obviously. But, like, so I guess somebody got a hold of them or somehow, you know, you can find them on DVD if you look really hard.
Fitting you bring it up, because, I mean, this all started with Within the Woods.
Yeah, that's right. Within the Woods was among those. I think that was, like, the last of those that they did.
Yeah, and that's what got him his funding in the end for The Evil Dead.
Yeah, like, their origins were really more comedy, like, they had Three Stooges-inspired stuff that they used to do.
Yeah, and it's odd, because, I mean, we'll get into this in a second, but in terms of how I got into Evil Dead, I got in with the comedy stuff first. The first of the movies I ever saw was Army of Darkness. And I really want to hear from everybody how they started, because I feel like that kind of changed my opinion of each of the movies after. Like, I look back at Evil Dead and I look back at it with a very different eye than I would have if I had seen it either originally or way back when. You know, obviously I was, you know, one whenever it first came out, but, you know, let's say I was 30 at that point. I wonder how much differently I'd see it. It's just, it was really ahead of its time in a lot of ways, and it kind of paved the way for a lot of things. Maybe not in the same way that Evil Dead 2 did, but in terms of what he did, especially with a really limited budget, it's a really interesting movie, and it's really interesting when you put it against the others. But again, like, my introduction was kind of the more comedic slapstick one of the group of them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Like I say, I wonder how much that colors it. Would it have been a lot different if I was introduced into the horror part of it first, or what? And that's something I always wonder about. Same with
the other way around.
Okay, good.
Order.
Yeah, I saw them all in order as well. I ended up seeing back when I was in high school. I managed to just randomly rent the first movie, because you'd hear so much about it, and it was just one of those movies that even in the 90s people were still talking about Evil Dead and the Evil Dead franchise. So I obviously seeked it out and I watched it, and when I watched it the first time, that the first movie actually still holds up pretty well and was still effective at giving some genuine scares along with the comedic elements.
I think it might be the scariest. I'd put it that way. I mean, aside from the remake kind of went further horror, but I think in terms of those original movies, it might be the scariest.
Yeah, and it's especially interesting to watch that movie now, because some of the scariest parts about it and some of the most interesting parts about it that kind of add to the visceral nature is all because they didn't have the budget to do anything. Because when they there's one point when Ash shoots a gun out of the window. And I was listening to the commentary, and they're talking about how that was an actual gun they shot, so near the camera. So when you see it break through the glass, and it was all real glass, it wasn't movie glass. So it just adds to this little element of realism, just because they didn't know any better.
So how I got started in the series is I actually came in from a very unique angle for this one. I had a friend of mine who was in the army, and he was on leave for like a couple of months, and he was living in my old hometown of Owen Sound, and we were randomly listening to Metallica in his apartment, and we were listening to this song called The Call of Cthulhu, or Cthulhu as they pronounce it on the album, or whatever it is. And
well, it's an instrumental.
Yeah, and he pulls out this movie. And it's like The Evil Dead. And I'm like, well, what the hell is this? And he starts telling me, oh, yeah, it's about this thing called the Necronomicon. And there's zombies and shit. And he pulls out the Necronomicon that you can buy in bookstores right now. It's by no means real, but it's a interesting read, to say the very least. So he pulls that out, and we start kind of reading through it, and he's like, okay, do you want to check out this movie, Evil Dead? I'm like, it's kind of an older movie, but, you know, we'll check it out because you like the Romero Argento stuff. It's got some pretty good gore, so let's kind of check it out. So we sit there, we're watching this thing at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I am just absolutely absorbed in this because I'd seen some horror movies that were pretty gory. This one, to me, it had a different kind of charm to it. Like the gore, I don't know. There was something about the production of this movie. I could tell it was obviously low budget, but it was made with such love and such care that I absolutely fell in love with it. And then, so I went home at like 6 in the morning, whatever, came back the following night, and he's like, okay, well, do you want to see some more? I'm like, yeah. So he shows me Evil Dead 2, which was totally a departure from the first one for me because it was obviously more like funny and everything. And I remember losing my shit at the laughing room scene because I still get a kick out of that today. And then it would be a couple of years later that I saw Army of Darkness. And that's the one movie I don't really care for. Which all hate mail can be sent to Mike at thisweekingeek.net. I actually literally just finished watching the director's cut about 10 minutes before we sat down to record this show. I like that version a lot better than the theatrical cut. And yeah, like that's how I got my intro to the series. I've always appreciated the horror elements to it. Especially because I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft. I love the idea of messing with the unknown forces that lie just beyond human understanding. And I really like how in the first movie, the demons get summoned from that old tape recorder and how words actually still have power sort of thing. And it's probably... I don't know. It's probably one of my favorite movies. When I went back and watched it again this past week, I don't know. There's just something about it that I really, really, really enjoy more so than I've ever kind of enjoyed a horror movie before. I wouldn't call it my absolute favorite horror movie. That title belongs to Friday the 13th, Part 6. But there's just something very genuine about it that I absolutely fell in love with. So I guess as we kind of go through the conversation here, James, how did you get into this?
Well, like I said, I watched them in order, but not close together. I think I watched the first one, rented it from the video store one time because I heard a lot about it, and I watched it and I liked it, but I saw a lot of horror movies at the time, so to me it was just another horror movie. And like you said, it was kind of scary. Like it didn't have the comedy elements in it yet. Not as much. I really loved individual scenes. I think there were moments that stuck out to me, like the stop motion part at the end with the book and everything. And when all the faces are melting and all that, I remembered that scene. I remembered I really liked the way they got the camera to move over the swamp and all those cool things they did with the camera movements. But it sat with me for a while. Like I just kind of like let the movie alone. Like I wasn't like, I didn't like super love it, but I liked it. And I just kind of like, it sat on me for a while. And then finally, like maybe years later, I watched Evil Dead 2. And then when I watched the second one, it blew my mind because it did something that I didn't see before. And that was the way it blended horror and comedy. I've just never seen it done in that same way, and it really clicked with me. And then immediately after seeing 2, I had to see Army of Darkness. And Army of Darkness seemed to go full comedy. I think Army of Darkness really understood the character Ash the most. But I think 2 is my favorite still because of how well it balances both the horror and the comedy. And how crazy is it that now, after all these years, we're finally about to see some more Evil Dead material coming up real soon?
Yeah, it's like, I'm really surprised that it's taken this long to get anything new Evil Dead that isn't a comic book or a video game or something else.
Yeah. Because once they do a remake, it usually seems like, well, they did the remake, so they're kind of done with the original then, aren't they? And I've heard things where they were going to cross over, like they were two different, you know, like a shared world or whatever. And then I heard about Army of Darkness 2 and that was going to happen. And it seems like now they settled on just doing a TV show, which was the last thing I expected.
Yeah, like just the fact that they can continue the narrative X amount of years later. So I guess the theatrical ending to Army of Darkness is the canon ending now. I don't know where the comic books will fit in, if they do at all.
Yeah, I guess. But Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, I think, have all said that they preferred the director's cut ending. And I did, too, because they said, you know, that's what would happen to the character. They felt like that was the most fitting way for him to turn out. And I always felt if there was a fourth movie, because, like, you know, they went to medieval times and now they're going to go to the future and, like, every movie was going to be, like, a new theme, kind of. But I guess it's sort of going backward again. I don't know.
I don't know. I think I'd kind of like to see Ash fight Deadites in space or...
Yeah.
Or Mad Max meets Evil Dead, which would be incredible in all sorts of ways.
I don't know that we need an Ash X set in space.
No, but it might be awesome. Come on, we've had Muppets, we've had Jason. I'm trying to think, what's the weirdest thing we've had in space in terms of movies?
I would argue Hellraiser in space was a standout.
Yeah, that was pretty strange. And Santa Claus versus the Martians or something at some point.
Oh yeah.
So okay. All right. So to go through the individual movies, we had the original back in 1981, and like we said, it took a very serious approach to it. Obviously, very, very low budget shot, I think, in 1979.
Amazing work on the one thing none of us mentioned, outstanding work in it on a lot of the makeup.
Yes.
Some of the... They took as much care with everything as they could in terms of continuity. I mean, certain things change, hairstyles being one of my favorites from scene to scene with it. But I mean, one thing that was well maintained throughout, they did a good job with makeup, especially considering a really limited budget at the time of anywhere from, I don't know, estimates put it around the $350,000. I don't know what kind of makeup person that buys you, but apparently they did a really, really good job at the time.
Well, yeah, because you think that, like, you look at people who would have been around in that area, like, yeah, like your Tom Savinis and whatnot. So there's probably people who are very much inspired by him, and obviously you want to do the one-upmanship. But the thing about the makeup for the first Evil Dead, it's legitimately unsettling at times, especially with the eyes, which I think that's something the remake nailed really, really well.
I think my favorite special effects from the original is the pencil stabbing scene.
Yes.
Like in the Achilles heel, like it's like, oh, I mean the tendon,
ouch.
But
and just
yeah,
that slight
painful.
And just that little bit of a kind of twist as the pencil goes in.
Yeah, and then the added moment of, like, there's blood dripping from the pencil, like, afterwards, as he's, like, as the Deadites approaching Ash. Like, it just really works.
My favorite – there are two shots in that movie I absolutely love. There's one where I think it's Cheryl. She's possessed by the Deadites and is hanging there, and they're like, why have you disturbed our ancient slumber? And it's just the way her body is – it literally seems possessed. Like, there's some really good body language in that particular scene. I love that. And when James is talking about the stop motion, there's a scene where I think it's Scott's body starts to rapidly decompose. And, like, the skull just goops, just melts in, like, super rapid stop motion. And I love that. I mean, obviously, you can tell it's not real, quote-unquote. But I just love how weirdly gross it looks.
Yeah, and then it's got all, like, the cockroaches come out and the snake comes out. I always wonder if that was kind of an inspiration for Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. Like, that little shot of, like, all those creatures coming out. Because that's a big part of that cheesy movie.
Now, I've made the mistake of watching that particular scene while eating. there is a part there's a part during that scene, like it's not a blink and you'll miss it, but you'll notice stuff coming out of the arm of the corpse. Never eat rice pudding at that particular time, because I'm pretty sure that's what that was.
It looks like coleslaw at one point.
I'm just like, okay, that's enough of that. I kind of like how the movie, because it's, I think it runs like just under an hour and a half.
It's 85 minutes.
85 minutes. So it knows exactly what it's got to do. Sets up the character, sets up the situation. And I think the Evil Dead movies, one thing I was noticing today, they're so well-paced. They never leave you any time, excuse me, to get bored. And they know just enough when to ramp up tension, when to not do it. And just how to make sure things are clicking along and never overstaying its welcome. And I think horror movies, specifically in the 80s, they either did that really well or they didn't. Because I can think of certain horror movie franchises where they kind of overstay their welcome, where they're maybe just 5 minutes too long and it kind of takes away from it.
The only thing I'll add, and the last thing I want to add about the first Evil Dead is something you alluded to, and that is, you know, the timing, pacing, and everything. I liked the characters in this movie. They did a good job of setting them up as at least likable people. And this is some foreshadowing, because the remake did not. I genuinely liked the people in this, and not just Ash. I mean, with a pretty short amount of screen time for everybody, they at least set it up that you kind of want these people to escape, at least.
Yeah, like, there's nobody truly unlikable in this, and when obviously their fates happen to them, you kind of like, oh man, that's brutal or whatnot. One moment with that too is when I think it's Scott tries to leave and the woods kick his ass and attack him, and he comes back in the cabin, he's dying on the couch, and he's like, Ash, I don't want to die. And you see Bruce Campbell emoting as best as he can to him. He's like, It's all right. We'll be fine here. Drink this water. And then he just drops the glass out of his hand because he's gone. Like, there are little great character moments in there like that. Like, you're right. It's one of the few slasher horror movies where you know everyone's going to die, but you kind of give a shit. And I can't think of too many movies, specifically from the 80s, that give you a completely likable cast of characters that are essentially cannon fodder, in essence. I'm trying to think, what else can we really say about the first one that probably already hasn't been said? Roebuck, what are your thoughts on it?
I'm really impressed by the film. I still find it holds up really well. I mean, the gore effects especially, they've already been mentioned, but they are a standout. And I think one of the most interesting parts of the film is the tree scene. I'm surprised you haven't.
I was waiting for someone to bring it up because I didn't want to do it.
the tree scene is really interesting because I remember seeing an interview with the girl who was in that scene, and apparently, according to her in the interview, she said she did not know about the added stick part, like that was added afterwards, and she didn't know that was going to happen. So she watched it and kind of got really disturbed and, like, has kind of avoided the film for a while before she, like, could come around to the fact that they did that to her. So it was it's pretty interesting. And the first film is probably the one – if you've watched the movie Cabin in the Woods, I think that entire film takes a lot of elements of the first Evil Dead. Like, with the added scene of the cellar door flies open just like it does in Evil Dead. And if you pay attention to the screen when in Cabin in the Woods, there's one of the monsters that can attack is the angry molesting tree. So it's pretty influential.
How oddly specific. Yeah, I remember the first time seeing the tree scene, and I remember because I'd never seen anything like that. I was maybe 16 at the time, thinking, holy shit, they can do that? Yeah, it's for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, and I'm sure there's at least one or two, tree rape is the best way to describe it. And they even do a grosser version in the remake. It's almost reminds me in part of Jason Goes to Hell, where the thing crawls up the chick's dress, and that's about as vivid as I want to get with this description.
Coincidentally, that actress did also not know about that happening. So
seems to be a recurring theme.
Filmmakers are like, hey, if you want to do this, don't tell the actress.
If you want a genuine response. Okay.
There's a lot of good behind-the-scenes footage, mainly the second movie, on the DVD. And I remember on the second one, I remember there's a lot where, like, when the tree's pulling her across the ground, it's like all the vines are going into her face. And they had them all go underneath the makeup and everything. And they did a really amazing job, like you said, with the makeup. It was incredible.
Which I guess that's a good point to transition into Evil Dead 2, which is a lot of people's favorite of the series that I, like, happen to just kind of notice when I talk about this online. Evil Dead 2 took a much more comedic approach, and definitely where the musical, which we will talk about a little bit kind of later on, draws a majority of its inspiration from. So Evil Dead 2 thoughts. I guess, James, let's start with you. What are some of the things that you love about Evil Dead 2?
Well, it was the first time I've ever seen somebody have to fight their own hand and cut it off. And then the hand gives them the finger, and then his reaction is to shoot at it, and then blood sprays out of a hole in the wall and fills the room. Like, the movie was just insane, and I hadn't seen anything like that at that time. I think Brain Dead, Dead Alive actually comes kind of close, but something about it, just the way the way they did it was just, it was just unlike anything I'd ever seen. So yeah, I'll just open it up there.
Ryan, let's go to you.
Pretty much the same reaction, actually, in a lot of ways. I mean, this movie, the camera work, an awful lot of it's been copied and done, maybe not ever done better. I mean, this opened the door to a lot of the films like Shaun of the Dead and others that try to kind of balance horror. Like, there's some genuinely scary moments in this movie still, but then you're laughing in between a lot of them. And it's really interesting because, I mean, this one really let Campbell kind of go, at least a little bit. I think Army of Darkness let him finally just go crazy. But, I mean, Bruce Campbell, this is some of his better work on both the comedic and the creepy side, which is kind of funny. But yeah, just this is a really good movie, and it really holds up well. And James mentioned a lot of extras. James, I don't know which version you have, but I mean, there's the Book of the Dead version, which has the sort of Necronomicon look to it, which is a really good version of it on DVD. You get a ton of different extras and everything with that.
Oh yeah, the one with that's actually like the Necronomicon.
Yeah, and you push it and it screams. Yeah, I liked that version. And if you're interested in movies or making movies, I think that's a must-own for a lot of people, because the amount of stuff, the amount of stuff in this that a lot of other people have used is phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned Edgar Wright, and the whole editing of how he builds the chainsaw arm, that's like in every Edgar Wright film. And has like become like a staple of his directing style, so it's definitely pretty amazing. I still think my favorite part of the entire Evil Dead 2. I love Evil Dead 2, and my favorite part is when he just starts laughing maniacally and then dancing with the lamp.
Yes,
like
yes.
As the lamp goes up and down, and he's like dancing with it. I'm like, oh, it's the best. It's probably
he has so many levels. Like, he goes from fear to just laughing, and then just laughing and going insane and being afraid again. It just kind of has so many shifts in mood.
I love some of the subtle jokes in the scene before that, when, like, after he cuts off his hand, the farewell to arms, like, being the book that's weighing down the wastebasket.
Oh, yeah, and you're talking about how they had all the Wes Craven nods back and forth. I forget. Was that the one where... Well, see, I guess it starred with The Hills Have Eyes, where they have
the ripped poster.
Yeah, with the Jaws posters ripped up in the background, like they're saying, like, The Hills Have Eyes, this is the real horror movie. Like, forget about Jaws. And then they were thinking do the same things, and they did it with The Hills Have Eyes, didn't they? Where they
they did that in the first one, and then the second one, there's Freddy's claw is actually in one of the shots of the basement, I believe.
Because I think it was Nightmare on Elm Street, one of those movies. They were watching Evil Dead as if oh, that's just a movie. That's not the real scary thing. This is the real scary thing. So they kind of had a thing going just back and forth.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
One of the things about Evil Dead 2 is, like, we've all talked about how funny it actually is. I think that is one of the few times I can think where horror and comedy absolutely work together. The only other movie I can think of that I appreciate on that same level, as I mentioned before, was Friday the 13th Part 6, which was directed by Tom McLaughlin, and he took it in a very funny self-referential kind of humor kind of way with like Evil Dead 2. Like James was just saying, there's so many just shifts in tone, especially in that one scene. And then as things kind of go on, there's one scene where they're jumping on, it's the body of Henrietta. They're trying to stuff her in the cellar, and one of her eyeballs pops out and goes right in Bobby Joe's mouth.
Yeah. That's such a memorable and like horrifying scene. Like as soon as you mentioned that movie, I'm like, oh, the eyeball scene. Ugh.
And it's weird because go back and watch that movie again and listen. There's so many audio jokes in there too. Like when she swallows the eyeball, you get that loud Disney that gulp sound hidden in there. I'm pretty sure there's like a Wilhelm scream in there somewhere. There's just so many little things that are hidden in there that you really appreciate, especially from, because horror, a good chunk of that is sound design because you have to create the like atmosphere. This movie knows exactly when to go from playful to scary to playful to scary to just, you didn't see that coming, did you, fucker? And there's so many just great performances, like Ryan was mentioning, some of Campbell's best comedic work. And I would actually say this is probably his best comedic work. But obviously, like, he's done so much stuff since. But I really think this is a movie that made me love him as an actor for sure. Because I really got the sense that this is the movie where I think he had a lot. I wonder if he had a lot of input in how to portray Ash. Because this is where we get the more lovable idiots, or the not quite the braggart we get in like Army of Darkness. Where, you know, I think with Evil Dead 2, you start to see the slide of he's smart but not too smart, and it's pretty much all downhill from there. Another thing that I liked, or actually no, this confused me for so long, and even up until a couple of years ago, till I think I got less stupid. I thought for the longest time Evil Dead 2 was a remake of the first one, but just
sort of is.
It's
hinted at, but.
It's like a rare breed of like semi remake where it sort of begins like almost as if they were going to shoot a recap and then continue from that, but it was, you know, sort of just made into its own film. Like it really is like a different movie in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's almost like they do in old Friday the 13th movies, but instead of using stock footage, they just decided to refilm like the entire first movie in a condensed chunk.
Well, yeah. I was like kind of reading up on this. Supposedly they wanted to bring back all the characters from the first movie, and when they did the like kind of recap, but due to budgetary constraints, they only brought back Linda. And for the longest time, I really thought that this was the sequel in the regards that the first movie happened and Ash just happens to go to another cabin in the woods and there just happens to be the Necronomicon there again for the longest time. So clearly you I'm stupid. That.
But, he's very unlucky. What can we say?
Yeah. Slept too long.
There's also, like after reading Bruce Campbell's autobiography, there's like the added joy of just knowing that anytime that Bruce Campbell's getting something thrown in his face or getting hit with anything, it's always Sam Raimi just torturing him all the time. And then Sam Raimi's always using his car in every movie, and Bruce is always trying to do things to Sam's car. And I think he says somewhere in the book, he's like, he asks Sam where the car is now, and he says, oh, it's in some junkyard or something. And he's like, well, he's smart because he knows, like, if I knew where that car is, I'd send a mechanic out to dismantle it right now.
if Chins Could Kill, I highly recommend it. Roebuck will love it too.
I love that it's a very visual book too. He has lots of pictures in it. He shows like diagrams of how they did the camera angles and stuff. Like there was the Ramo cam and the Samo cam and all these things to get all the camera angles. All these like crazy rigs where they put the camera on like a stick and ram it through the back of a car and then out the front window. And there's also a chapter that has nothing to do with Evil Dead or anything, where he's just talking about this car that he bought that was a complete lemon and was just breaking down. And he has copies of all the invoices and everything of all the different times he's had to have repairs done to it. It's just a hilarious chapter. He gets off, he goes off tangent a lot.
He does in each of his books too. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
There was one thing in this movie I didn't notice until tonight. I was reading a part because it's Ted Raimi, Sam's brother, in the Henrietta kind of monster suit. And at one point she picks up the character of Annie and is spinning her across her head. And I read how you can see the sweat pouring out of the ear. And I decided to look for that tonight. And I just saw ew. And the fact that I think it was, did Greg Nicotero work on the special effects for this one or just Army of Darkness?
I believe it was two.
Yeah.
Anybody know?
Yeah, I think when we watched it, I believe I saw Greg Nicotero did come up on the special effects.
Yeah. Because yeah. I remember saying he had to drain the suit of sweat. And if you've ever
and
been...
they show it on the documentary. Like you actually see the foot. And they pour it out, and it's just sweat pouring out.
That is the grossest thing I can imagine.
And actually, I never saw the sweat coming out of the ear, but I thought you were going to mention when Ted's ass is actually exposed in the suit.
No, I missed that. Where's that in the movie?
Yeah, it's like they're spinning around, and there's just a big rip through the back of the costume, and it's basically just like his bare ass just... and the thing is, I never would have seen it until they mentioned it, and now that I know it's there,
you can never unsee it.
You can see it clear as day now.
It's amazing just how much special effects kind of go into something like this, and it's cool just to see Greg Nicotero's career, because I think the first movie he did was Day of the Dead, I think, which means he was under Tom Savini. And yeah. And now he does stuff for The Walking Dead. I'm pretty sure he's working on the new YouTube Red show that PewDiePie is going to be a part of, which I still think is the stupidest thing ever. I digress. But yeah, I mean, if you've ever worked in special effects, I've been on a couple of film sets myself. Latex is hot as shit. And just when you mentioned the sweat out of the foot, there's a scene in a movie, I think it's Jackass 2, where they have the fat guy dress up in the giant sweatsuit and they drink it, and I'm going to stop this line of talking.
Ugh.
Army of Darkness, let's talk about that. That's less gross.
That's a wonderful lead-in, thanks.
Shut up.
Army of Darkness is... I go back and forth, but I got to say, I think Army of Darkness might be my favorite.
I love this movie.
Yeah, every second from start to finish always brings a smile to my face and makes me laugh. Because to little things like Klaatu, Verada, Nictu, and then him messing it up, but also that it's a brilliant reference to when the Earth stood, the day the Earth stood still, and like all of the moments like that. Like it's just amazing. Great.
This
movie
is the most quotable.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's the most quotable sequel, too, because it actually picks up from the second movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm curious, it would be fun to sort of go through and try to figure out which movie's been aped more. Like, I mean, Evil Dead 2, an awful lot of elements have been used, and I mean, it revolutionized a lot of filmmaking and the way people did shots and camera work and that kind of thing. But Army of Darkness, in a lot of ways, kind of coined the whole, let's make a movie... Let's make a not very good movie intentionally, but somehow have it turn out good. And I mean, how many films have tried to do that over the years and, you know, varying levels of success? But it's really hard to do. And it's something that this one kind of nailed.
Yeah.
And I feel like it almost fell into it. I'm not sure if they meant to or what the, you know, going back, it would almost be fun to be on set to see what everybody thought they were actually making.
You know, can you think of any movie that has an audio rack focus?
I'd never heard that term before tonight.
I never did either until I saw the commentary on Army of Darkness, and they mentioned it. And I'm like, oh, so that's what that is? And they're laughing about it, like as if like they know that nobody's ever done that in the history of film. So that's how creative it is that they actually. There's a shot when it's during the whole skeleton battle at the end, and there's a close up on like a bow and arrow, but it's one of those flaming arrows.
Oh yeah.
The camera focuses from like the skeletons to the arrow, and when it rack focuses, the audio goes with it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like it goes to like the sizzling of the flame.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's funny, after, you know, I mentioned before with Wes Craven, and it's the same with Raimi in these movies and then some of his other ones as well too, stuff like Darkman and other films he's done. He continued to do and try different things, and again, he did a lot of it on a budget, especially at this point. Obviously with Spider-Man, budget wasn't an issue, but back then, I mean, Army of Darkness was one of his higher budgeted films and it was still only $11 million. I mean, that's one shot of a Michael Bay film. So, I mean, what he was able to do and all the special effects in this, because this is easily, I think, the most special effects heavy of each of the Evil Dead movies, and obviously until we get to the remake, but what he was able to get out of it, and man, I really miss stop motion. There is an art to that, and it's
absolutely,
it's sad that that's kind of been lost in all the CGI, probably because it's cheaper and it takes a lot less time. I mean, stop motion takes a crazy amount of time, but there's something with it, and I know it doesn't always feel real, like the way the frames work or anything like that, but it has a charm that seems to have been lost over the years.
Well, one of the things that I heard during the like audio commentary for it is they mentioned Army of Darkness is more or less just a homage to Ray, kind of Harryhausen and stuff. And there's an awesome documentary. I don't know if it's on U.S. Netflix right now. I think it's still on Canadian Netflix that you should check out if you're a huge fan of Ray Harryhausen and the stop motion stuff. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that. It's just, it has a charm to it. It has a look that I really, really, really like. And this is the only movie I can think of where they fight an absolute metric fuck ton of skeletons. like there's one point, there's one of the special features on the, I got the Blu-ray from Shout Factory last week, and they've got Greg Nicotero and I think it's Howard Berger talking about some of the special effects. There's one thing that they start talking about, because Sam Raimi came in to their specific effects house because they wanted them to like kind of do stuff for it. And at one point, he's like, well, how many skeletons can I get? And they're like, I don't know. How many do you want? He's like, I don't know, 5? He's like, how about 40? I like 40. And there's one scene where Bruce Campbell's driving his car in Army of Darkness, and it's got that huge propeller on it, just tearing skeletons apart left, right, and center. And Raimi was ludicrously ecstatic at that. There's also another kind of neat story from the Blu-ray, where, do you remember the deadite that attacks Ash in the pit? That's like the big grotesque monster looking one.
Oh yeah.
So they showed Sam a sketch of it, and he's like, I don't know whether I want that or not. So they went ahead and built the suit anyway. So they have him coming into the office to come look at the suit, and they've got a guy in the suit just standing there, motionless. And Sam's like, I don't know, that looks all right, I guess. Then it lunges at him. Sam almost shits his pants because he's so scared. And he's like, that's in my movie now. And that's something that I do appreciate about Army of Darkness, is all the special effects and how they are all practical. Like, this is before CG, because this was, I think this was shot in 91, released in 92. So this is before your Terminator 2s, your Jurassic Parks and whatnot. So CG wasn't really a thing yet. And I always love, I love the look of old school green screen and blue screen stuff, because it looks just enough unnatural but there's kind of a charm to it as well, just because you know the actors have to react to it. Like, for example, when they're fighting in the windmill, when Ash is fighting all the little kind of duplicates of himself, the production audio, you can hear someone yelling markers to him. And he's like, oh, yeah, on count 34, I have to duck. On count 33, I have to, like, fall or something like that. Because they had to match different frame speeds for it or something like that. So from a filmmaker's perspective, I found that incredibly interesting. Because I went
almost like you can trace, like, an era of special effects from King Kong to Army of Darkness.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've never quite thought of it like that. And it's kind of awesome just to be able to look at a movie like that and see the effects team and everybody else who worked on it. That was a labor of love. And I didn't even know this until like about a half hour ago, is that Danny Elfman did the music for this for nothing.
Oh, wow.
He did the main theme anyway. Yeah. There's questions as to how much he did, but he certainly did the main theme of the film.
Which, that's kind of awesome. I mean, he basically did it as like a huge thank you for working on kind of Darkman.
Yeah, he composed all of Darkman, but in general, he really only did the March of the Dead. That was the main theme for the movie.
But still, I mean, it's nice to be able to call in favors in Hollywood like that, because people will do that if they really like your work or if they enjoyed working with you one time. So it pays to make friends.
I guess. It's funny you mentioned the special effects, too, because this year we got a movie that was a throwback to all the old ways of doing special effects and the old ways of filming. I mean, go watch the extras for Mad Max Fury Road and watch the similarities in how they filmed those movies. Same sort of idea, all practical, but a lot of cameras that were moving, a lot of cameras set up overhead. Or over things, or through things, that kind of thing, and very sort of similar perspectives. Although, you know, Fury Road, obviously by a director who made most of his work in the 80s, and he had a few since then, obviously, but yeah, it's kind of same, and it's nice to see a throwback to those old ways rather than the CGI-heavy stuff.
Absolutely. Like, that's one thing I definitely appreciate is when a film can go practical, or when a television show can go practical. That's why I like Walking Dead. Yeah, there is some CG enhancement for blood or to take out certain weapons or whatnot, but all the gore effects, or at least 90% of them, are practical.
I'll be curious to see how much is practical in the television series coming up for Evil Dead, obviously.
I hope it's a lot practical. I really do.
I would expect so. It looks like it is for most of the stuff they've shown, filming, trailers, that kind of thing.
Now, I will say this. Army of Darkness is my least favorite of the series.
Boo.
And you guys are making fun of me off air for this. And I think the reason is it's because it's such a shift in tone. I mean, Army of Darkness is what, PG-13, right?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to know that myself.
Yeah,
I believe so, because I know there's an R-rated cut, and then there's an director's cut. So, like, I'm pretty sure it is PG-13 upon our initial release.
Yeah, so there's just – I think it was the massive shift in tone that I didn't really like, because I felt Evil Dead 2, it was funny. There was still gore. It was a horror comedy. I felt Army of Darkness was more fantasy comedy with some horror elements to it. And that's not necessarily taking away from it. It's just – it wasn't what I was expecting in Ash leading his battle against the, like, Evil Dead. I guess I was expecting more of 2 or 1, which I thankfully got that when we went into the remake, which came out back in 2013.
Army of Darkness was R. Universal desperately wanted a PG-13 rating, so Sam Raimi made a number of cuts, and they still gave it an R rating anyway.
It doesn't seem like an R at all, though.
No, but
it's a little tone. Like, it doesn't feel as risky as the first two.
Yeah, like, it seems like, I wouldn't say restrained, but definitely in a different vein.
Yeah.
So I guess let's move on to the remake. This came out, like I said, back in 2013, and upon initial viewing, I hated this movie. Though in the last 2 weeks, I've watched it about 3 or 4 times. And I think I found the perfect atmosphere for it. I was really sick a couple of weeks ago, just after I was hospitalized, and I wasn't able to sleep a lot. So I decided to turn this on. It's probably about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And because it's the fall, it stays darker longer, blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. So I live in a fairly small town, which is fairly sleepy. So, you know, there's not a lot of ambient noise. So I'm watching this, and there's just so many great audio jump scares in that movie. And it's not often that a jump scare gets me, but there's one point in the first, like, 10 minutes of the movie where you meet the possessed girl, and her father's about ready to kill her by setting her on fire. And there's this great moment where he's just about, he's covered her in gasoline. He's got the shotgun ready to go. And he's like, I love you, baby. And the daughter is like, Daddy, don't do this. Don't do this. And you just through the tears, the girl goes, I will destroy your soul or something along those lines. The camera cuts back to the father and then it cuts back to the girl. And it's just the girl just looks up. And you see her eyes be that yellow, kind of orangey, almost like Sith eyes from Star Wars, but way more fucked up. And she's like, I will kill you, motherfucker, and all this other shit. And it starts laughing at him and saying, I killed your whore, and all this stuff. And there's just little things like that in that movie I really like. Like, when the jump scares happen, I really think they're rather effective. And the makeup in that movie, I think, really sells a lot of the scares in it.
Yeah, I feel what my problem with the movie isn't the gore effects or any of the effects or any of the more frightening moments. It's simply the fact that I didn't really like the characters all that much. I mean, there are a lot of things the film does right, but to me, one of the most important parts of a film is the character, and I didn't like any of the characters, and in fact, my least favorite character was that guy with the glasses who reads the book.
Eric, yeah.
Yeah, so he almost dies like 5 times in the movie. And each time he almost meets his end, it's like my favorite part of the movie. I was getting like so excited in the theater. I'm like, I don't like this character. He's gone. He's gone. He's back. Okay? Okay? That's fine. It's fine. He's going to have an even crazier death. All right? It's coming. It's coming. No! They will not kill this character. He lasts until, like, the very end of the movie. And he has, like, the most damage, like, any horror character who's not the main character receives in a movie. And he still kicks.
Yeah, he's basically the Terminator in that regard.
I'm so mad because it's a character that I actually just want to stop on screen.
Yeah, some of the characters in that movie are genuinely unlikable, and the only people you ever really get attached to is the well, there's like two main characters. There's the girl Mia, who's like a junkie who's trying to get straightened out and is possessed for like 80% of the movie. And then there's the brother David, who dies, which actually genuinely surprised me, actually, when they killed him off in the last like 15 minutes. But yeah, they're all pretty much unlikable in one way or another. I mean, the girl, Olivia, she plays, like, a nurse. There's David's girlfriend. I think her name is Natalie in the movie. And as you mentioned, the high school teacher, Eric, who's this annoying prick. Yeah, it's kind of hard to find people to cheer for in that movie, all things considered. But I think if it does anything right, it does atmosphere well. Like
I'm going to tell you how it doesn't do anything right.
Okay, all right.
My issue with it is it's the definition of an unnecessary sequel. We talked about a number of films. Each of the first three, you could say, influenced not only the genre, but influenced filmmaking in a lot of ways. This one does nothing new. This one did nothing at all for the genre, did nothing to filmmaking. It is thoroughly unnecessary. It's just trying to sort of reimagine some of the very basic ideas of the original for a new audience, which is okay, I guess, but you have to at least have to be able to say or do something, especially if you're going to reboot something after, say, roughly 30 years. Do something different or influence something or change something, and it didn't do that for me. So it just falls flat. It's just, it's entertainment and it's there, but that's something I'd never say about the first three. It's a lot, they're a lot more than entertainment. And I think they're necessary, especially the second one. If you want to say get into film, or if you're interested in filmmaking, it's required viewing. And to a certain extent, I'd say the same about Army of Darkness as well. And this is not required viewing.
James, what about you? Because you can come at this from a true filmmaker's perspective. What are your thoughts on the remake?
I think the opening scene was great that you mentioned. And the ending was pretty stellar, but there's nothing else in it that I remember. Everything, you know, that's been said about the characters, I agree with. I didn't like any of them. I think it's one of few kind of things where it's synonymous with an actor, where it's Bruce Campbell, and I think he is synonymous with Evil Dead, and not having him in there, it didn't feel like an Evil Dead movie at all. And I mean, I don't know, like sort, what is it? Sort of sequel, sort of remake, reboot, whatever it is. It just, to me, it's just not an Evil Dead film. Wasn't necessary. Didn't absolutely hate it, but didn't care for it. And it just didn't interest me. It wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to see an Evil Dead 4. So yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it.
It's just kind of there. The only other thing, I just want to ask a question, roundtable. Does anyone else feel that, I feel like, and this is not, I'm not trying to slight Alvarez, who I think did a competent job with not an awful lot to work with, not to mention an uphill climb redoing something that somebody else did, but did not having Raimi flat out direct it and screenplay and really work on it, I mean, he produced it, but did not having him end up hurting it? I'd kind of say yes.
I don't know, because I like the way this movie took its direction. Although, now that you mention it, it doesn't feel like an Evil Dead movie. It feels like a story in that universe, but not necessarily full. Like, I think when I first saw this movie, I said it's not an Evil Dead movie. If it was anything else, it would be fine. Evil Dead conjures a certain, you expect a certain level of filmmaking, storytelling, etc. But I've kind of revised that opinion since I last saw it. And like I said, in the last couple of weeks, I like it because I think Alvarez took a harder edge to it. And I think it's more brutal and intense. And I think that adds a little something to it that kind of puts, it's more closer to the first Evil Dead than it is anything else. I think by taking some of the humor out and ramping up some of the intensity, it does add something to it. But without a likable cast of characters, that's kind of what takes it out of the Evil Dead realm. Because even in the original movie, you liked Ash, you liked Cheryl, you liked Linda and Scott. You didn't want them to die. Here, when the chick Olivia cuts off her own face, I'm thinking, man, she was a bitch. I'm kind of glad that happened. And you were never really cheering for Mia, who was the chick trying to get her life together by going out and, I guess, detoxing with her friends. Truthfully, it's the character that Andrew likes the least is probably the most interesting in the movie, Eric.
And what? You mean the guy who decides to say, read out loud the book that says, do not read this? No, seriously, please don't read this. I'm just going to read this out loud.
Yeah,
like,
but
that's so dumb.
Yeah, but he's the most interesting one in it.
How often do you actually follow our work instructions, Andrew? I mean, come on.
Yeah, don't push the history eraser button. Well, of course you're going to press it. But yeah, although ultimately I think you care about him more than anybody else, because David is, sure, he's the caring over older brother-ish who took off because his parents were sick or whatever, but you don't care.
I mean, I care about him dying, so yeah, I guess he is the character I care about.
Hey, that's what you told me today about me. Oh, sorry.
But yeah, I can see your guys' points, but let's continue around the table. So, Roebuck, your go.
I think I don't know. I don't think I would have wanted Sam Raimi to rewrite and redo the first Evil Dead, because he kind of did it at the start of Evil Dead 2, the best it's going to get. So I think had I Sam Raimi just done the movie again, like, I'm sure it would have been fine. But
well, I think if Raimi does it, it's a sequel. By the way, I probably should have made that a portion of the question, because I don't think Raimi would want to redo his stuff either.
Okay, yeah, an entirely different story. Then yeah, I would have been a lot more interested to see it. Two, I would have been probably enjoyed it a lot more. But Sam Raimi has made some mistakes in his later career, so I don't know, because I wasn't a big fan of Oz the Great and Powerful, and Spider-Man 3 is a story of its own, but it would have been interesting. I don't know. I think my answer to this question will really depend on how he does with – because I believe he's doing the first episode of Ash vs. the Evil Dead, so – If that's on point, then yeah, I definitely would have wanted him to see.
Yeah, Halloween night.
Yeah.
So just a couple of days away. So, James, what about you? What do you think?
I know why they didn't. Like, I would imagine I know why, because, you know, it was such a hellish experience doing the first movies that I just feel like if they're going to do it, the only reason to do it would be to do it even better and put even more blood, sweat, and tears into it. And, you know, I mean, all the physical pain that Bruce Campbell went through and everything, it just seemed like the only reason to do it would be to do it, like, twice as much, like, go even harder with it. And now it's like, unless you're going to top it, then why would they? So I wouldn't really want to see them do it unless they were really going to go for it, if they really had something more to say with what they started. I wouldn't have liked to have seen them do it, but sort of not go all the way with it. And with the TV series, I'm not sure what is going to happen with it, but I'm, you know, very, very interested to see what they do.
Well, I guess that's a pretty good point to transition into the TV series. Like I said, it premieres this Saturday as of this recording. We're doing this on October 26, 2015. The early reviews that I've heard is that it's very good. And that doesn't entirely surprise me. Like we just said, if it's Sam Raimi behind the camera and if he's had huge input into this, yeah, it's going to be pretty much what we expect. Now, I think this is only how many episodes is this?
10.
Do you think there's enough gas in the franchise to keep going beyond that?
I think the best way for me in my own imagination, in my own head, you know, like I said, the picking up after the future ending of Army of Darkness, when they, you know, he's in the future. I would think it would be like a radically different theme each time. But this seems like they're going more like within what we would see in the first two Evil Deads. So I don't really know how much they can do with that or not. So I'm not sure, like, you know, when the gas is going to run out.
It all depends on what their big overarching story is, because I imagine there's going to be some big bad guy that we haven't seen yet. And it really depends on what the story is there and what aspects of the Necronomicon or the Deadite infestation they're going to explore, or if they're going to, like, shift to other supernatural things. Like, I don't know, right? I mean, it would be great if they incorporated some of the comic book stuff. Like, I know this would never happen in a million years, but if they did any of the Freddy vs. Jason versus Ash in the realm of Ash versus the Evil Dead, because in the second season, you could just call it Ash versus Freddy versus Jason. Like, it goes along and just like a different title with the verses every time. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd see it.
My God, I would pay so much money to see that.
I've never read those comics, though, but I know I was at a Q&A one time where somebody asked Bruce Campbell, what do you think of Ash versus what is it? Ash versus Evil Dead versus Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees?
Yeah, it's like Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, I think is the official title.
Okay, yeah, and they asked him what he thought of it, and he was like, oh, I think it's shit. Like, he doesn't like it at all.
Well, he's wrong. It needs to be made. No, anyway. I mean, this season's, it's 5 hours, well, 4 hours probably after you take out commercials, bumpers, et cetera, right? So they've had, you know, 28 years roughly to add stuff. And I mean, I look at Miller and the Mad Max franchise. He had 30 years, and he says he's got at least 3 movies plotted out now. So, I mean, anyone on this, and, you know, Raimi's directing the first episode. I don't know exactly how involved he is. He is the executive producer, but let's assume that, you know, everybody working on this probably grew up with Evil Dead, and they've probably spent all this time in their head coming up with different ideas. So I think there's probably enough gas for at least a couple seasons anyway. Or at least I would think, you know, you give a bunch of creative people, writers, producers, everybody, even some of the actors probably have some ideas based on what they've seen. Give those people, you know, 20 some odd years, they're going to have at least, you would figure, enough good ideas to crank out a couple of seasons. I don't know about, you know, it running 7 or 8 years or something, but we'll see.
Yeah, time is good for some things.
I'd like to see them bring in guest directors for this. I'd like to see what Robert Rodriguez could do for something like this.
Oh, yeah.
Because that could be a lot of fun. So we just mentioned comic books. So let's talk about some of the weird tie-ins that have existed with the Evil Dead franchise. There's been some action figures, which I think have all been done by NECA. I'm pretty sure I've seen Evil Dead Minimates. I have a vinyl Pop figure on my shelf right now, standing beside Batman, Judge Dredd, and Daniel Bryan. There has been one of the weirder things, which comes from Toronto, which is just an hour down the road from where I currently am. Back in 2003, they did Evil Dead the Musical. They originally did this, I think it was at the Just for Last Festival in Montreal, I think like the summer before. Evil Dead the Musical takes elements of the first 3 movies and puts them into an hour and a half stage show. Notable elements out of this involve the splatter zone, where basically the first 4 or 5 rows, they give you the option to wear a raincoat. They drench you in blood, like buckets of this stuff. I saw this at the Rivoli, I'm pretty sure I slaughtered that name, in Toronto, and there was just blood everywhere. And I saw this with like 2 different casts, with a different guy playing Scott, but it was Ryan Ward playing Ash. And some of the songs they do in this are kind of funny. I'm actually probably going to put a link in the episode here so you can check out some of the soundtrack. My favorites being What the Fuck Was That?, I'm a Housewares employee, and I think there's another one, but, one of the lines, they kind of quote Army of Darkness, and some guy's talking about S-Mart, and the guy's like, I just thought you were fucking with us. Turns out you're not. So yeah, if you want to check out those, I'll put a kind of link in there too. I actually interviewed, the guy that played Jake. Nug Nargang, and he's on he's currently on Sportsnet 360 as one of the hosts of the wrestling show on there, whose name completely escapes me right now, but he's on there with Jackie Redmond and Jimmy Corderas, who's a former WWE referee. But yeah, it's definitely worth it if you can see this. I know right now there are traveling shows. You can probably catch one this week, actually. I know there's one in Kentucky, Toledo. There's always one in Las Vegas. I didn't get a chance to go there when I went there last year. Really wanted to, though. So it's not impossible to track this down. But if you ever get a chance to go see the musical, absolutely do it. In fact, just download the soundtrack to this. Like I said, I'll put a kind of YouTube link so you can check out all the songs. They're quite hilarious. Video games. This franchise has had quite a number of them, going all the way back to the Commodore 64 or the ZX Spectrum in the 80s. And I've never played this, but Ryan, I understand you have.
The Commodore 64 one, heck no.
Okay. Well,
I played the other ones. Commodore 64, a little before my time. And by the time I could get around to one, I was too busy with the NES. There were never any Nintendo games based on this, though, which is a little surprising. You'd think LJN would have shat one out or something, but yeah. Nobody bothered.
No, they were busy doing Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, so the next game we got was Hail to the King, I think, was the second one. And that was, the PlayStation era.
Yeah, so PlayStation, Dreamcast. I want to say there was another call. I think it was on PC too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And James, you actually did a video for this a little while ago.
Yeah, I posted a video with Doug Walker where we played Evil Dead Hell of the King. And yeah, we didn't have such a great experience with it, as you can see from the video. But it's strange that I waited this long to play any of the Evil Dead games. And I'm finally starting to get around to them. So I'd like to try out the other ones. I have played the Commodore 64 version very briefly one time. But it's kind of hard to track down. I played it off of a ROM. So even I have to do that sometimes. But maybe I'll give it another try sometime.
I am genuinely surprised there has not been a nerd episode in the same vein as your, like, Halloween review on the, like, Evil Dead games, actually. I'm genuinely surprised.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Would have been a good year to do it if I had time. But I got to play some of the other games beforehand. But what do you guys think of the other games? Because I haven't gotten to them yet.
They're solid. They're probably Hail to the King is probably the weakest of the sort of later era games.
Regeneration wasn't bad, right?
Yeah, Fistful and Boomstick and Regeneration have a lot of similarities. Regeneration's probably the best of the bunch. It's also, I think it was the latest. Yeah, it is. It was the latest one. That's right. In order. And, yeah, I mean, it showed up on the Xbox One, PS2, and, you know, all these for some reason were released on the PC. But, yeah, this was probably the most fun game anyway. It still wasn't great, but it just, I don't know. I mean, part of the reason was this one is the only one that gave you unlimited ammo and gas and everything. So it was more action-oriented, and you got a rage meter you build up. And it just, I don't know, it was more fun than the others, at least. The other one's a little more slow, not as much action. This is sort of the Army of Darkness of the Evil Dead games, I guess, where it's more just run around and blow shit up.
I kind of hope there'll be more games. I know there's one out on, like, mobile phones right now. I wouldn't mind a new downloadable hack and slash game, which maybe if, I guess, Ash versus the Evil Dead is really successful, maybe someone will pick it up. Because I think the last company to have the rights was THQ, and THQ is no more. After, I think it was Saints Row 3 shipped, they just pretty much went down the shitter just due to mismanagement and that stupid tablet video game they had.
Yeah, a variety of problems, and then all the delays with South Park and their rights and all that fun stuff. I miss THQ. They were good.
So do I.
Although, now I'm sad.
Although, about THQ, one of the funnier things, when they were cleaning out the offices, the former president, one of the things he made sure to take was the giant purple dildo bat. There's a great picture of that, I think, on Reddit or something. All right, guys. So I guess we're just going to begin wrapping up the show here. So what is the Evil Dead's legacy in film and in Ash as a character?
Holy cow. I don't know where to start with that.
He's just like a lousy hero, basically. He's like a hero that you're stuck with, but you love that he's lousy and that he's, you know, just inept at certain things. And, he can save the day, but he also fucks up a lot.
He's a lovable idiot. I mean,
yep.
And the one-liners. I mean, is this full of one-liners? Does anybody have favorite lines?
Groovy. I say that all the time because of him.
This is my boomstick.
Let's go. Swallow it.
I love the line in Army of Darkness where he's like, "You're in charge of Jack and shit, and Jack just left out."
Yeah, that's one of my favorites, too.
One of my memorable shit-talking moments, I was playing, this goes back like 10 years, and I was playing Rainbow Six Raven Shield on the PC, and I had voice chat on, and we were playing like Search and Destroy or some shit like that, and I remember sneaking up on a guy, shooting him in the back, and I was like, "Good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun." And obviously, all the obscenities just came flowing out of this kid.
And even with that, there's so many one-liners where they had two versions of that line, where the other one where he says, "I'm not that good." So it's like,
there's so many that they probably have like tons and tons of outtakes of stuff. And you kind of get the feel that he's just making it up as he goes on. Like, give me some sugar, baby. Like, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean? Give me some sugar.
I think my favorite use of that line is in the Marvel Zombies comic book series. He like uses that line on Dazzler, which is just great.
Now, and also I'll add this in terms of the character, in terms of acting and that kind of thing. I think there's a lot of people that have kind of tried to do the Bruce Campbell. I mean, this really launched his career, and he's a capable actor. I mean, he does good work in Bubba Hotep, for example.
Oh, love that movie.
And some of his other films. Like, he's a good actor, but he – I don't know how much acting there is in kind of playing the lovable idiot for him. And, you know, he's not an unintelligent man, obviously. He quite clearly – I'm not calling him an idiot. He quite clearly understands his audience. He's far from it. It's just – he has a natural charisma, and you want to see the guy on screen. I mean, even in Burn Notice, where he's playing a not as likable guy, you want to like the guy. And I think that's something a lot of actors would kill for.
Now, here's a question that I just kind of thought about. Does anybody have any personal Bruce Campbell stories? Because a lot of us go to conventions and appearances. Yeah. Any stories here?
Just the way he answers questions is hilarious. Somebody asked him, do you regret Congo? And he goes, why? The check cleared.
I actually have a story about Bruce Campbell. This goes back to Fan Expo, which is this huge thing that happens in Toronto every year. It's basically our version of Comic-Con, but shittier. This goes, like I said, probably about 2007, 2008. I'm doing one of my first reports in the crowd. I've got my camera person, my like audio person. I don't know what's going on. In fact, this was the same convention where I'm pretty sure I accidentally knocked Buzz Aldrin to the ground. So I'm an asshole in that regard.
Did you say one giant step for me? Oh, sorry.
He probably would have kicked my ass, even for a friggin' old guy.
Actually, that's true, yeah.
But I'm walking through the crowd, and I guess because I've got media access, I'm heading towards the back area. I'm supposed to go meet like Stanley or something. So I'm going through the crowd, and my camera person is shooting a bunch of B-roll just over my shoulder, and I hear a voice go, hey, nice hat. And I don't think anything of it. I'm like, yeah, fuck off. We go back and review the footage. Guess who said nice hat?
Buzz Aldrin. Oh, sorry. Bruce Campbell.
Fucking Bruce Campbell. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. I could have had a moment there, but nope. I'm just like, yep, get out of my way. I'm self-important.
Was there anything special about your hat? Like,
I was wearing a Guitar Hero hat covered in buttons, I think. I don't know whether he was making fun of me or whether he legitimately meant it, but there's my one and only brush with the chin himself, and I fucking wasted it. fuck my life. All right.
I read his book. Does that count? Both of them.
Have you taken anything from his books in your real life? Do you live the Bruce Campbell way?
So how about the wrap-up now there, Mike?
All right there. All right, guys. So thank you for joining us here on our topic show on ThisWeekInGeek.net for the month of October, talking Evil Dead. As we often do, we always want to hear from you guys. So if you want to email feedback@ThisWeekInGeek.net, would love to hear what you guys thought. What are your stories of the Evil Dead franchise? Maybe you got a memory. Maybe you have a better Bruce Campbell memory than I do. Would love to hear from you. I'll read those emails on our weekly news show, which airs every Friday or Saturday on ThisWeekInGeek.net. We also have a voicemail line, which is 817-717-7202. Would love to hear from you guys. James, what do you got coming up before the end of the year?
Before the end of the year? Two more really big Bored James episodes, one really soon. A nerd episode in time for Halloween and a nerd episode in time for Christmas and some other surprises in between.
Good stuff. And it's going to be available on YouTube and on Cinemassacre.com.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. I know for us here on Twig, between me, Andrew, and Ryan, next month we're probably going to be doing the Fallout franchise because Fallout 4 comes out in just a few weeks. So look for that towards the end of next month. I'm going to try and rip through Fallout 3 in New Vegas in a month and hopefully Fallout 4. So
we can probably get Blanchard to review all the Fallout Boy CDs. I'm sure those are tied in. Oh, God, why?
So we'll be talking about that. And then in December, how can we not talk about Star Wars? So that'll be something we'll talk about as The Force Awakens on December 17th.
I guess I should watch those for the first time. No, just kidding.
So anyway,
catch up on those ones.
Yeah. I've heard of it. I just never got around to it. I don't know.
Just, yeah.
It's one of those indie films you hear about. And
that's a film with the guy with the pointy ears, right?
Oh, God. Anyway, so for this week in Geek, we have been
Andrew Roebuck.
Ryan, the uneven flow.
That's your cue, James.
Oh, I think I said it already, but, okay. But we stepped on each other's lines there.
All right, guys, and I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, groovy.
What the fuck was that? Your sister has turned into a zombie. What the fuck was that? Your girlfriend was a demon too. What the fuck was that? She just ripped my pre-ripped Abercrombie. What the fuck was that? I got some Shelly on my shoe.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join... Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat f***.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh, freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Whoa, my god, whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
So, do you screwheads believe I can save you from Kandarian demons now?
We're fucking with us.
We thought you were a lying prick.
Yeah. All that jive about you, a killing demon.
It just sounded like a bullshit.
But apparently you weren't talking smack.
Cause we saw that evil chick. She was going to eat us.
And severely beat us.
Till you shot her in the teeth.
That's right, you saved us.
You saved our lives.
You saved me and my baby and these kids too.
Saved us all.
You're the baddest motherfucker in this whole strip mall.
We thought you were a phony on some anti-reef, but now we see that you're a hero and you saved the day. Because you blew that bitch away.
Well, I told you I could kill these demons, and none of you believed me.
No,
that's why you're
merely customers while I'm the S-Mart employee.
Yeah, 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 fool,
'cause
yeah.
I kill what looks even slightly evil. Who knows who the next victim will be?
Not me!
'Cause I shoot and kill and saw
until
we need to clean up on aisle three.
You are the man.
I big slap evil with my one good hand.
You're my hero.
I shake down deadites like they owe me dough. I saw that demon trying to ruin your shopping day.
Shopping
so I grabbed my 12 gauge and I blew her away. That's right, you blew. You blew that bitch away.
You blew that bitch away.
You blew what threw me the ring. You blew it like a drunk
teen. Blew the bitch away. Used to fucking hate you and your lying ways, but now we change our minds. You see, you're okay because you blew that bitch away.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody!
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.